So tonight is the first night of this 8-week course on mindfulness or insight meditation. And I wanted to start by talking about what that means. What is mindfulness and what is insight meditation? They're almost synonymous. They have two different flavors of the same idea. Mindfulness basically can be defined as just paying attention to what's happening right now. Consciously choosing to pay attention to what's actually arising in the moment, to the exclusion of everything else. And what I'm going to be doing is following the Buddha's teachings, actually teach a particular form. It comes from the Thai and Burmese forest tradition of monks on how to practice mindfulness. There are, by the way, many, many, many ways to practice mindfulness. What I'm teaching you is just what I've learned and what I practice, which is all I can ever teach. All that's appropriate for me to teach is that. And then there's this word insight. Insight meditation is another word that you often see attached to this practice. So mindfulness is that practice of what we'll call bare attention. Insight is what can potentially arise out of that practice. You have an insight into the nature of things, the true nature of things, how things really are, which is another way that you sometimes see mindfulness described or defined even as a practice that allows you to see things as they really are. I'm going to talk a lot more about that over the next 7 weeks. I'm going to leave that there for now. Actually, I also want to read directly something from the sutta here. Because in terms of the question, why are we doing this? This is from the Satipatthana Sutta. This is the actual, so this is the Buddha's words. This is the Buddha's introduction to this teaching. So it's sort of relevant since I'm doing an introduction. If you've never heard the sutta before, the sutta has a certain style to it. That takes a little bit of getting used to, perhaps. Bhikkhus, and so bhikkhus is a word that means people who are practicing. Traditionally, this meant people who were monks and nuns, but it could, in our case, it means all those who practice, consciously choose to practice. Bhikkhus, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of pain and grief, for the attainment of the true way, for the realization of nibbana, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. So that's a pretty big statement. And basically what the Buddha is saying is, this is what I discovered. This is the practice I discovered on my own that led me to nibbana, to no longer suffering. And so that this is what I'm teaching. I'm teaching what I learned myself. So this is like sort of straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. Only 2,500 year old horse, but it's still the same, teaching. And so people often think of mindfulness, especially in today's sort of more contemporary culture, you see mindfulness talked about as, you know, a way to make yourself feel good, a way to, you know, do things better in the business world. You know, football teams have mindfulness coaches now, scary as that may be. And so you see all these other things that, and it's true that this practice can and will over time make you happier. And it will make your mind clearer and more focused. But that's not why we practice. Those are like side benefits almost. We practice to move towards nibbana, towards realization, towards enlightenment, whatever word you choose to use. If you have a Christian background, you could call it Christ consciousness, and it would be perfectly appropriate, for instance. It's like, that's what this practice is all about. And we can't ever forget that. All this other stuff that's going to happen will be great. We will feel better. We will get happier. But along the way, by the way, this practice will be sometimes quite difficult and might make you quite miserable. Don't be surprised. It's not a big bed of roses. It's all wonderful. There's this balance going on all the time. And if this practice, if we're going to actually see things as they really are, some of the things we're going to see as they really are aren't going to be that pleasant. And we have to be able to, and we learn to skillfully work with that and deal with that. That's part of what the practice is all about. So that's the introduction. And then the very last thing he says here, namely the four foundations of mindfulness. So the four foundations are like four, I hate to use the word steps, more like sections of the practice. But they are sort of steps in that one prepares you for the next. You sort of see this progress. And the first of these foundations is what's called mindfulness of body. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about mindfulness of body. In fact, first 3 weeks, that's all we're going to talk about. But we're going to sort of, because in the sutta, the Buddha spends a huge amount of time talking about mindfulness of body. This is a big topic for the Buddha. So I want to honor that teaching. And that's another thing about this practice, is that what we're going to be doing is using what we have, a body, as the place where we let our mind rest. All meditation practices, no matter what meditation practice you look at, have what they call a focus or a point of concentration. In some practices, that might be a mantra, or it might be a visualization practice, or it might be a prayer, or it might be staring at a mandala. There's like hundreds of different ways to meditate. Okay. The beauty of what the Buddha did was he said, oh, look, we have bodies. Let's use that as our focus point, as where we put our concentration, as opposed to looking at using anything. So now we don't need any equipment. We don't need a temple. We don't need any special books. We don't need nothing. We just have to have a body. Well, we all have bodies, therefore we're all set, right? Later we start talking about the mind, and that's just another part of the whole process. But he starts with body. In fact, the very first thing he starts with, and what I'm going to start with tonight, is the breath. Because if you have a body and it's alive, you're breathing. I've been at several births, and I spent a lot of time doing hospice work, so I've had many deaths. And what I saw was, at the beginning, what happens? The first thing that happens is inhale. And then there's lots of inhales and exhales, and like thousands, who knows, millions of them. And then at the very end, the last thing that happens is exhale. But in between, there's always going to be breath. It might be, has many different qualities, and we'll talk about that. It's shallow and deep and all kinds of different things. But it's always there. No matter where you are, no matter what you're doing, the breath is always very conveniently there for you to use as a place to focus the mind, as a point of concentration. So it's where we always start. And to be honest with you, where we often come back to, and I'll talk more about that too, about 3 or 4 weeks from now, we'll start, oh yeah, by the way, you can always go back to the breath. The breath is like this really valuable tool in our kit bag. So then, let's see what the Buddha has to say about this. And how bhikkhus does a bhikkhu abide contemplating the body as a body? Here, a bhikkhu gone to the forest or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut, notice sort of isolated and by themselves, right? Then, sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, sets his body erect and establishes mindfulness in front of him. Ever mindful, he breathes in. Mindful, he breathes out. Breathing in long, he understands, I breathe in long. Or breathing out long, he understands, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he understands, I breathe in short. Or breathing out short, he understands, I breathe out short. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body. That's a lot of instruction, huh? But that's what he's saying is, here's a way you can actually tune into the breath that makes it interesting. I mean, really, that's a lot of what we're trying to do sometimes with this practice, is trying to make it interesting enough that we don't fall asleep or get really bored. So what can we do to make it interesting? And the first thing we can do is, as he says, when you're breathing in, know that you're breathing in. And when you're breathing out, know that you're breathing out. Simple. And then he says, oh, but more than that, you can also like pay attention to the quality of the breath. If it's long, know that it's long. If it's short, know that it's short. I can expand that, you know, into, instead of long and short, it could be deep and shallow. It could be jerky. It could be, you know, forced. There's lots of descriptive words we can use to, when we're talking about breath. So now, how do we do this? It's like, this sounds like an interesting thing to try and do, but how do we do it? Well, in the tradition I come from, there's a practice called noting. And noting is a way of using the mind very sort of delicately to stay connected to, stay tethered to the breath. I use the word tether because a tether is like, has some elasticity. So you're not like stuck, you're not bound to it, but it's like has some flow and flexibility to it. Right? But you're tethered, you can't go too far. Okay, so here, how do we tether to the breath? And the idea of noting is, as you inhale, you consciously say the word in the mind silently, in. That's what you're doing. I'm breathing in. So you're actually just having this descriptive word that tethers you to what's actually happening right now. I'm breathing in. So I actually say silently, softly in the mind, the word in. And then, of course, I exhale and I say out. And then, by golly, another breath starts. And I say, so you just use in, out. Now, in, out for some people is too clinical. So it could be that you're using words like inhale, exhale, a little more exact. It could be using words like rising, you know, inhalation is the sense of rising, of lifting, and exhale, falling, dropping, sinking, any of those words. So already you've got some options. You find the words that work for you. You know, some people, I like in, out. I like the simplicity of those, just having that simple word. Other people prefer rising, falling, because it's more descriptive. Maybe your first language isn't English and you want to use a totally different word in German or French or who knows what. that's fine too. It doesn't have to be in English. You know, just whatever those equivalent words would be. And remember that at times, a particular inhale or exhale will have a certain quality, a certain sense to it that sticks out in your mind. And it's like, oh, that was a long one. So then the note, instead of being in, might be in long or in short or just long or short. Soft, pushed, lots of different words. So if a particular inhale or exhale has a quality that catches your attention, then what you note is that quality. This makes the breath, the process, a little more interesting and a little more precise. I'm actually paying enough attention to the breath that I notice, oh, that was different. That was a deep one or a short one or a long one or whatever it was. I'm paying enough attention that I can then note that, whatever it was that happened. So this allows a little closer tethering. Now, of course, what actually happens is, there we are. Okay, now I'm going to be still and I'm going to meditate. And I go in, out, in. I shouldn't have had that cheesecake for dessert. I can just feel it. The mind, it's gone, right? It goes off someplace. It could be about what you hate, you know, something you remembered from work. And, oh, I got to remember to do that thing at work when I get blah, blah, you know, or whatever it is. Something that happened today that annoyed you and you're ranting to yourself. The mind goes, it goes someplace. It's no longer paying attention to what's arising in the moment. It's off in the future or off back in the past someplace. Not in the moment at all. And then at some point, you remember, I'm meditating. I'm sitting here meditating. And then now I have to note what's happening now. And for now, all we're going to do is say thinking, because that's what's happening right now. Right now, I'm thinking. Sure enough, thinking. And then you go back to the breath. These moments when the mind drifts away from the object of concentration, away from the breath, and you noodle about something, and then you remember, these are moments of pure insight. Ah, look what's happening. Now you're not thinking, you're noticing, you're paying, you're actually seeing what's actually happening right now. This is an insight into what's happening right now. So we all have moments of insight all the time. We all have moments of pure mindfulness. When those moments arise, those are the moments that in some ways are almost the most important, because in Pali, the word mindfulness is sati. So hence Satipatthana Sutta, mindfulness, wisdom teachings. Sati has many other translations. It's one of those words that doesn't translate that well because it's from a different culture and a different time. And usually it's concentrated as mindfulness. But another translation of sati is remembering. Just remembering to pay attention, remembering to go back to the breath. That's mindfulness, remembering to go back, remembering that, oh, this is what I've chosen to do right now. I've chosen to pay attention to what's happening right now. And it's like, it's those moments of remembering when we've drifted, and that drift might be 2 seconds or it might be 10 minutes. Doesn't make any difference. We just remember, note what's happening right now I'm thinking, and then consciously choose to go back to the breath. The difficulty, of course, is that you noodle off, blah, 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 doing whatever it is you're thinking about. And then you remember. And then you know thinking. And then you go, oh, what's wrong with me? I can't do this stuff. It's too hard. I'm not good at this today, blah, blah, blah. You know, now you're thinking about the fact that you were thinking. At which point you go, oh, thinking, and go back to the breath. But it's so easy to fall into this pattern of judging ourselves. Oh, I'm not doing it right. Oh, it's not like how it was described in the book. How come I'm not doing it right? I'm not having any blissful feelings here. I must be doing something wrong. You know, just let all that go. Really, the most important thing, especially at the beginning of practice, is to learn to concentrate. And to learn to concentrate, we have a point of concentration, which is the breath, and we have to consciously choose to go back and concentrate on the breath to the exclusion of everything else. Later on, as we go deeper into the sutta, you'll see how everything gets included in what we're paying attention to. But for now, even if you've been practicing for a long time, just see if you can just pay attention to the breath, to the exclusion of everything else. Just breath. So another question is, what else can we do to make this more interesting? What else can we do to keep the mind tethered, to keep the mind focused on what's actually happening right now? And there are two other what I'll call skillful means. There's a word I'll use a lot. Skillful means here's other tricks you can do, or other techniques. Skillful means sounds better, right? So here's two other skillful means you can use to help you stay tethered to the breath. One is to have what's called a touch point, some place in the body where the experience of an in-breath is strongest. Three things that people typically choose one of these three, but maybe you'll have a different one. You know, the belly, because you know, on a breath, the belly expands. Here's the diaphragm's dropping. Or it could be the heart space, because there's a sense of opening and lifting in the heart space. Or it could be the flow of air from the nose across your upper lip. It's a little more subtle. Some people like to be subtle and let that be their touch point, that actual sensation of breath as it flows across the lip. To be honest with you, I've never been that successful with that one, partly because I think I have my excuse is I have a mustache and it gets in the way, but whatever. Everybody finds what works for them. I'm a heart-centered kind of guy because that's my nature probably too. So, but everybody finds what works for them. So you have a touch point so that as you're inhaling and noting in, there's a little bit of you that's also sort of tuning into that touch point, like the sensations in the body that are going on as you inhale. And then there's the exhale, which might be the same touch point, might be a different one. That's up for you to experiment with. Some people like to use a different touch point on the exhale as opposed to the inhale. Some people use the same one because it's easier. Once again, here we are. You have to experiment and figure out what works for you. So you have a touch point. This is optional. Some people like this. Some people find it, oh, there's too much going on. The other thing you can do is try practice what's called aiming and sustaining. And these are the first two steps in what are called the five factors of concentration, which I'll probably talk more about much later. But aiming and sustaining are sort of where it all begins. Aiming says, let's see if we can see the very beginning of an inhale or the very beginning of an exhale. Can I actually see that micro moment, that millisecond or two, when the breath actually starts, whether it's an inhale or an exhale. And then can I sustain, can I stay mentally connected to that breath for the entire time of that inhale? Because it's amazing when you start to really pay attention how many different things happen in just an inhale, the different sensations in the body, in different parts of the body. And it's, wow, this is like there's so much going on in just a simple inhale. And if you sustain right to the end, you get a real sense of, wow, look at all that breath that happened just that 3 seconds or so. And the same thing, then you try and see the very beginning of an exhale and the entire exhale itself. So these are, like I said, skillful means. They're things to experiment with, to try out. Don't feel like you have to do them. They're just some people, it's like tools you can use that for some people, they work. I use all of these different things at different times, depending on my mood and what's going on in the rest of my life and how the practice is going. And oh, it just feels like I better aim and sustain today because I need to really bear down a bit or something. Everybody finds, one thing, you find what works for you. So you notice, I want to just note two things and then we'll do some practice. One is that I've already given you a whole bunch of options. This practice isn't like cut and dried. Here's how to do it. Go ahead, do it. I can't do that because there's so many different things you can do, even within just the breath. So you have to accept the fact that this practice is an experiment, a grand experiment, where you are going to explore the breath, in this case, to start with, and see what happens. And see if these different skillful means work for you or they don't. And it might be, you know, over the course of the next weeks, you'll try different ones. You don't have to try them all tonight. You know, this talk's being recorded, so you can always come back and listen to this recording. What was that he said about touch point? And you can listen to the little part of the talk about that and then use that for your practice that day. So don't feel like you have to remember it all or anything like that. It's just good. It's there. And over time, as you practice, it becomes normal, natural, that you see which of these work for you. Some of them just don't work at all. Like for me, like this thing about the feeling the breath over that on my upper lip, forget it. It doesn't work for me. Other people, it's like, oh my God, it's the best thing. Once I figured that out. It's like a miraculous event for some people, right? So we all find what works for us. The other thing is, because we're focusing on the breath, there's a tendency that many people fall into to somehow think that you have to control the breath, that you have to become perfect breathers. Well, let me tell you, your breath's been there for a long, long time. And it's going to be there hopefully for another long, long time. And it's always going to be there. And it's always going to change. It's always going to change. And trying to make it a certain way is trying to sort of control reality. Doesn't work. Never works. You might be able to control it for a while. And if you, like me, come from a background of yoga, where in yoga, of course, you spend a lot of time very precisely controlling the breath, you might have this habit of breath control. And now you have to forget about that and not try and control it at all. Just let it be. And the breath changes based on all kinds of things, the weather, your mood. Oh, you get caught in some story and your breath gets really tight and then you wake up and you remember and you go back to the breath and the breath is really different than it was before you heard that story, you got caught in that story. It's just natural. Don't try and control it or have the breath be a certain way or fix the breath. It should be this way. Just let the breath be and pay attention to it. That's all you need to do. Using all these things, noting, as I explained earlier, or the touch point, or aiming and sustaining any or all of these. Always use noting. The other ones you can add on top in addition to. Noting is sort of the base practice that we always have. And as we go over the next 8 weeks, we're going to add many more things to note and ways to note things as we go along. So that's it. So before we sit, I want to make sure that you don't have any questions about all these instructions. So if you have questions, wave your hand at me or something, and I will unmute you and you can ask a question. If you don't have any questions, nobody has any questions, then we can just practice. Oh, you're all so good. It's great. Some of you are sitting so dark, I couldn't see your hand waving anyway. Okay, so let's just, remember what I said earlier about those of you who have been practicing for a long time, I would like to really strongly suggest that you just put on your beginner's mind and just pretend you don't know anything else other than what I've just said and practice in this really simple form. It's actually quite wonderful to practice with just the breath. There's a whole sutta called the Anapanasati Sutta, which basically says, out of just paying attention to the breath, everything else can arise. You can become enlightened by simply paying attention to the breath. So it seems like a good thing to start with anyway. I won't go into say anything more about that sooner, but it's an interesting view of things. So let's once again find that comfortable posture, whether it's seated in a chair or on the floor or however you're settling. And then I like to take a few deep breaths to start. Just a full inhale and a complete exhale, like consciously controlling the breath. This allows you to sort of energize yourself, to sort of wake up a little bit, get a little juice. I also want to mention to those of you who are listening to this as a recording later on, we're going to sit for half an hour. So try and do that when you get to the end of this recorded message. And then just closing your eyes. You've taken those deep breaths. You've settled the body. And now we're just going to sit, paying attention to the breath, the rising and falling, the in and out of breath. Just let that be your total point of concentration. And I'm going to turn my mic off again.